Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. In this episode, I speak to pundit, podcaster, and psychotherapist Richie Sadler.
I didn't think I had a book in me. I never thought I'd write the last book I wrote. And if a 15-year-old me was told that I'd be having a conversation like this at the ripe old age of 43, if 25-year-old, 35-year-old me was told that,
yeah,
it would have just been astounding to me. Like, completely, I would not have been able to even contemplate a conversation like this about a book like this, which was written by me.
Yeah.
It would have been way too big a leap to consider.
This is my second time sitting down to chat to Richie for the podcast, and as always, he is such a brilliant guest. He's married to Fiona, and when we spoke in 2019, his autobiography Recovering had just been released, and in it he revealed he'd been sexually abused when he was 14 by a physio he'd been attending for back pain. 2.5 years on, he's just released his second book called Let's Talk, written for teenage boys. And in it, he covers everything they might need or want to know about sex, intimacy, relationships, breakups, and everything else in between. He also runs his own private psychotherapy practice, and he has a passion for supporting adolescent development, so he really knows his stuff in this area. Here it is. And I remember when we spoke, and it was back in 2019. So in a pre-pandemic world, you were saying, that's it. I've written the book. I'm not going to, I will be writing another.
I think I remember the phrase I said to you, something along the lines of, I think I told my wife at the time, Fiona, if I ever even mentioned the thought of writing another book, shoot me. And here I am.
Here you are. Yeah. No, but look, a lot of time has passed, let's be honest. And I suppose lockdown offered time to write a book.
It did. Sure. Good God, that. It presented a lot of challenges, but it offered exactly what you said, a lot of time, which presented new opportunities, and I just went for it.
Yeah.
The publisher initially kind of said that they approached me and said, would you think of writing something for the age group that are just leaving primary before they get into secondary, the kind of pre-adolescence, just when puberty's kicking in and adolescence kicking in, they're going from a primary world to a secondary school world. And I had to think about it, and I thought, I'm much more comfortable and familiar with the world of lads. They're a little bit older than that, because I predominantly work with lads that age.
Yeah.
And I went back to them and said, what about the 15, 16-year-old age group? And I just went for it.
Yeah. This is what you know. This is what you've been studying. This is what you, in your practice, you're speaking to young people. So you're surrounded by it all the time. You are aware of what the issues are coming up for them.
Yeah, like, so if I went to other age groups or wrote about let's say girls, or I wouldn't have had the familiarity that I have based on the work that I've been doing for the last few years. So it just felt like the right thing to do, and I thought it'd be worth doing. We're chatting now on, because this is a Thursday morning. Yeah. This is the morning that it's released.
Yeah.
So congrats. I'm still in the stage where I've no idea. And everyone who writes a book will say this, that the pre-launch or pre-release phase, there's only a very small amount of people have actually read it.
Mm.
They're usually the people involved in the publishing or the editing. You might extend it to a friend or a family member if they have any interest, but like I can count on one hand the amount of people who've read the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I've no idea yet what the...
the feedback's going to be.
Exactly. So you just, like the last book, you sit there and just brace yourself for all kinds of responses.
Well, I think the responses from my experience of not reading it cover to cover, but reading good chunks of it, I think this is, people are crying out for this. I mean, I know that this will be a book that I'll hold on to and give to my son when he's of the age. Because a lot of us, and look, we're Irish, a lot of us grew up with a very poor sex talk or none at all, or maybe the book put under the pillow.
What was yours?
Not really, it was non-existent. And I'm not saying that to be mean or nasty, but it was just the truth of it. So I think normalising, as the book is called, Let's Talk, normalising the conversation around sex, relationships and all that goes with it. Before we get into it, you on a personal level, because back in 2019, you'd got married, you'd finished your master's, your own book, Recovering, was just launched. So you had a lot going on. And now, a few years on, you have had major back surgery and you've been recovering from that and releasing the book. Mm. So how is life at the moment?
Life is great. It's everything feels like a novelty to me. Now, I know a lot of people on the back of lockdown have been saying this for a while, like sitting with people and making eye contact with people and being out of your house or away from your family or the people you live with. But so I had spinal fusion surgery on the 30th of November, and I was told that for the first 12 weeks, I'd more or less have to stay lying down. Mm. So for about 22 hours a day, I'd be lying down, which was just brings a real simplicity to life. That's just what I did. And then to the next 4 weeks of that afterwards, so for the month of March, I was allowed to do a little bit more. And then I went to see the physio last Friday for the latest checkup, and he said, you're 4 months now. It would, the phrase he used, it would kind of take a sledgehammer to dislodge the fusion that's now in your back. Like it's solid, you're good to go. And he asked me to do one thing. My shoes were in front of me on the ground, and he said, just pick up your runners there. And I did. And the way I picked them up was the way I've been picking up things for years. I kind of went down in a really awkward way, as if I was protecting myself, or as if I was expecting to feel pain. And I made the, like, I to be an old man groan out of me, like the noise you'd expect from a fellow who's in his 60s. And that's just the way of, and he said, no one picks up the shoes like that, and you don't have to anymore.
Brilliant.
So it's like a confidence thing, or a mindset set shift now that I have to, that I'm really looking forward to. It's not going to hurt if I do really basic things anymore. So just go and do them. So Fiona is like really excited by the prospect of being married to someone who can go for walks or maybe who doesn't say after an hour and a half of a night out, is there any chairs around? Like, can we go home?
Yeah, okay.
So God knows what life will be like from here on in, but I'm delighted I'm out of the bed. I'm delighted I got it done.
That must have been hard.
It was.
22 hours.
Yeah, they get me really... I've had loads of surgeries before, and the advice afterwards in terms of pain management was, here's some tablets to take if you need them.
Right.
But the advice here was, here's the tablets that you take.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't wait till you're painful in pain and respond. Just kind of
keep it topped up.
Yeah. So, which was great. So I was relatively comfortable. Now, I was out of my mind.
Right.
there was the strongest stuff ever.
Right.
So for most of December, I was kind of lying there a little bit tuned out of the world.
Okay.
Which was fine. I didn't have to do anything. Like, I had no responsibilities. No one was expecting me to go anywhere. I just shut down everything.
Okay.
And
Fiona was minding you.
She was great.
Every moment.
It's kind of reliant. You're reliant on living with someone like Fiona in order for that to be a success.
Because yeah, sure.
If you're living alone, it won't work. If you're living with someone who is short of patience or is out the door with a million other things that they have to do, or they can't be there, or they're just there's not the kind of people you want to be around when you're a little bit vulnerable. You'll struggle, but I was really, really lucky.
Yeah, sure, you're a great team. I remember that from the chat we had before, and what a brilliant couple you are. So you're back swimming as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Jumped back in last week for the first time.
Class.
And even that was, I was nervous, like getting in. I was like, am I allowed? Again, this really, the basic is, am I allowed to kick my legs? Am I allowed to move my arms in ways? Because having spent 12 weeks being told, you don't reach for anything, don't twist, don't turn, don't bend.
Mm.
Just be very, very careful. So I just have to get all that advice out of my head.
Yeah.
And just go and live.
Yeah, brilliant. So inside the book, you say, for my 15-year-old self, which anyone who's read Recovering, I felt it, you know, I really did. I would imagine for you that is, that's pretty big.
And I actually thought for a long, long time about what to put on that page. You don't have to put anything on that page. You don't have to dedicate a book to anyone or mention anything. And, you know, I wondered, will I write it? Will I name check my nieces and nephews? There's eight of them. And will I mention Fiona? Or will I tiptoe into the area that I ended up writing about?
Mm.
And it just felt like I'll go with that, because a big, as we mentioned a moment ago, a big driver for this book was a lot of the experiences that I've heard young people speak about over the last few years.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be good for them to have something like this, or maybe the decisions or their behaviour would have changed if they had conversations or around this stuff or read a book like this beforehand. But also, like, at a way, way, way deeper level, I was kind of thinking back to me back then.
Yeah.
There'd be people listening to this who didn't read the first book and won't know what we're talking about. Like, I wrote about being sexually abused in my early teens. So I do think when we often talk about young lads in relation to sex education, for lots of understandable reasons, the focus is often on, this is important for them to know so that we can protect girls. Mm-hmm. Or it's important for them to know so that they won't wrong other people. And there's a section in the book where I write about consent. It's like, lads, I'm sure you've heard people talk about the importance of respecting your partner. That's absolutely essential. But do not forget, like, you're worthy of respect too.
Yeah.
And when we talk about respecting your partner's body or your partner's voice and all of that, remember you have a voice too, and that you're worthy also. So obviously that comes from a very deep place. Mm. But it's an important part of the conversation for young lads.
Of course it is, yeah.
Mm.
Now, I know it is aimed at, as you said, young lads, but I do think that even though it's not written for teenage girls, I think we can all, including myself, I think this is not just a book for teenagers. I think the parents of teenagers would get a lot out of reading it.
Yeah, I had one message on Twitter already this morning from a woman who said, just read it. My lads aren't of the age yet to read it, but I've gotten a load of pointers in what to say and insights into the kind of dilemmas and challenges they're going to face.
Because we forget so much. We do forget what it's like to be a kid, teenager, when the body starts to change and what's going on for us. Like, you have to bring yourself back to that to have kind of understanding for what they're going through. But we don't have to, because we just read the book.
Yeah, but you're right. I do think we all, like, one of the most common things I get in my practice when the parents are sitting in front of their teenager and me in the first session, and they explain the behaviour or the thinking or the world that their son or daughter is in. And often it comes with a bit of, like, you know, we wish he didn't do this, or she's a bit like this. And it's a bit of judgment or a bit of something. And I kind of invite them then to go, they're 15, are they? Yeah, okay. Can you remember what you were like when you were 15? Mm-hmm. I know it's a long time. Can you think back? Like, can you remember what conversations were you having with your parents? How much did you listen to mum or dad? Or how comfortable were you saying X, Y, and Z? And then they spend a little bit of time thinking, oh God, no, Jesus, no. I wouldn't have said that to mum, wouldn't have said to dad. Sure, I stayed in my bedroom. I wouldn't even sit with them when they were 15. And I said, were you good friends? Were you close? Jesus, no, it's like a battleground.
Yeah.
It's okay.
There you go.
So you can relate and identify with the experience of the young person sitting right next to you. Mm. And I think we do that often. Like the most common thing is I'll get sit in front of somebody and the parents, and basically what they want to say is, will you get my 15-year-old to act as if they're 30?
Right.
Get them to think like a 30-year-old who's an adult, who has life experience and who knows the link between their behaviour and the consequences of the behaviour, and they can be empathic of all other people, and they can think through their choices before they act. See, that's lovely, but that's not how 15-year-old brains work.
No.
So there's a process here, and there's time that we have to be to consider. But let's get talking.
It sounds like it's actually the parents that need a lot more coaching when it comes to the changes than the kid, because I suppose the kid or the young person, hormones are raging. There's all the stuff going on. They're kind of along for the ride.
They're just doing their best.
They're doing their best. Yeah.
Yeah. They're just, and like even the parents, like I asked you a moment ago, can you remember the really open, helpful, informative conversations you had with your parents about this stuff? And you couldn't?
No.
Nor did I. Now, it wasn't because my parents were bad parents. It was because I was really shy. I had no vocabulary. I didn't know if it was okay to talk about this stuff. And I didn't know if they wanted to be the person I talked to anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if I sat down with my parents and said, what were your parents like around this stuff? Like, how open were the chats in the 50s and 60s when you were teenagers? So it's kind of like just, like, let's try and do it differently than how we've always done it.
Yeah, completely.
Because I don't think how we used to do it is an approach that's going to work for everyone, particularly not today.
Yeah.
And I think when you work with young people as well, you often, like, a lot of it is crisis response stuff. The distressing thing has happened, or they've acted out in a way which has caused themselves or other people a problem, and you're there to kind of pick up the pieces afterwards. And I think it'd be much better if you did the early intervention stuff, where you talked openly before about the road ahead.
Yeah.
These are the kinds of scenarios and dilemmas that you're going to be facing over the next year or two. Let's get talking. Do you have any questions?
Yeah.
Does anyone know? And often it's tricky to have the conversations because, again, go back to when you're 15. Like you're going red all the time at the mention of anything. You're uncomfortable with certain topics being mentioned. And you don't have the confidence or the emotional intelligence to really get into certain stuff and certain topics.
Yeah.
And I think why I thought a book would be useful is because it's not exposing or shaming in a way that some conversations can be. And you can hone in on certain topics. Without anyone knowing which topics you're honing in on.
Yeah. I'm reminded of a conversation I had with a sexologist called Emily Power-Smith on the podcast.
I heard your conversation. I loved it.
Yeah. Oh,
was
thank
it
you.
Two parts?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, she's brilliant, isn't she?
Yeah.
And one of the biggest things that came out of it for me was, I suppose, as a parent of two kids now, is that the talk doesn't happen like when they reach a certain age and the next thing you sit them down and you tell them it all. It's happening the whole way along. And I want my kids to be comfy to ask me any kind of question, but I need to grow up and be mature enough to be okay with the awkwardness of it. And I think that's a key to it, isn't it? We have to get comfy with the uncomfortable.
Yeah, because it's not like you can draw parallels to like discussing loads of different conversations between a parent and a teenager, or a uncle and aunt and their nephew or niece who's a teenager, or a sports coach and a teenager. But none of them are really comparable to the conversations around sex and sexuality and intimacy and all of these things, because a lot of people feel a little bit ashamed or a little uncomfortable. It's embarrassing. And that's not just a teenager. That could be the adult too.
Yeah.
For loads of really obvious reasons, they may have had experiences in their teens where they go, oh my God, I don't want this young person to go through what I went through, or I don't want them to make the mistakes I made, or I half remember how difficult it was, but Jesus, I want them to have a perfect, smooth ride with no bumps. And you really want that for young people. You don't really know how to bring it up, or you don't know if that's achievable. You don't know if it's your place to say it. You don't know if they want you to be the one to talk to them about it.
Yeah.
I think it's just important that we ensure, however, whether it's chats at home or curriculums from school or books like this or whatever else young people, wherever they go for information is that they get appropriate information that helps.
Yeah.
And that we kind of changed the landscape a little bit from this being a conversation that we expect each other to be embarrassed and ashamed and uncomfortable about, to just normalizing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Particularly
yeah.
for teenagers. Because they're like, I kind of wrote this with 15 and 16 senior olds in mind. There will be younger ones who'll be ready to understand some of the topics, and there'll be plenty of people older than that who will still need to read some of it. But it's like they're not far off, like the age of consent, being able to drive, being able to drink, getting a job, earning their own money, moving out, going to college. Like they're just on the cusp of loads of big stuff. And in the world of their sexual development, the things are really kicking off around that age.
Yeah.
So help them.
So help them, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Just help them. And this is one way. It's not the only way, but it's one way.
It must be really satisfying for you knowing that you are making a difference, because, you know, not just the young lads and the parents and the people that come into your practice and that you work with, but the people who will read this book, that will, you know, not do that thing that will forever haunt them, or whatever it might be, that it's like, oh God, if I could only go back in time, and if I knew that, you're going to prevent a lot of of those pitfalls, I suppose.
Well, do you know what? I think it's there's nothing you can do in podcast or book form or documentary or conversation or class, anything you can do with young people that will absolutely prevent them from hurting other people, behaving in ways that they regret, saying stupid things, embarrassing themselves, or getting to their mid-20s and they can look back and go, Jesus, I nailed that. I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't make any changes. Like, that's not realistic either.
No.
So, like, loads of things they'll be doing throughout their teenage years are things they'll be doing for the first time.
Mm.
And, like, we've enough life experience now between us to know that you don't get everything right the first time.
Yeah.
And when it comes to relationships and sex and behaving with partners and saying the right thing in tricky conversations and relationships, it's you're constantly learning.
Totally.
The learning never stops.
Never.
You never get to a stage where you go, I've nailed this bit.
Yeah, yeah.
this is it now. I'm the expert.
Yeah, completely.
So this is just kind of talking, I think, just helps. I think it's better to talk about stuff than to pretend it doesn't exist, or to pretend we all know everything, because we don't.
No, we don't.
Especially not in this area.
I see a lot of parents struggle with not knowing at all, or not coming across like they have it together for their kids. Is that a part of it? Or what have you experienced? Do they feel like they need to, you know,
I often get, and it's really common. Like you can imagine the mindset of parents who bring the young person to therapy, like straight away, I think brilliant. They're already really actively engaged in a process of doing all they can for this young person.
Yeah.
And they've acknowledged that, okay, additional support or additional intervention or help is needed, which is brilliant. That's what you'd love every parent to have that approach. And then they're sitting there and they might have some bit of kind of judgment. They're going, okay, you know, maybe we're not doing it right and that's why we're here. And I kind of just, like, get that out of the room.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason to feel like you've got shortcomings here or that you're not doing it right if you think a book like this is needed to help out your young person, or that you don't have all the answers yourself, because it's tricky. And obviously there's a phase as well. You might remember from your own, or you might experience it when your kids are this age, where it can feel like a battleground, because I don't want to get too waffly and therapeutic here, but like one of the things an adolescent does, which is kind of their job, is they have to push back against boundaries.
Yeah.
And they ask questions and they sometimes challenge authority, and that's a healthy thing. You're meant to.
Yeah.
Like, go to bed at 9. No, I want a 9:30. Give me your phone at 10. I want a 10:30. You know, there's all this, and sometimes parents can think, my God, they're regressing here. They weren't like that when they were a child. They're gone off the rails. And that's appropriate. You're meant to do that. You're meant to push back. And in relation to all this stuff, if you're at that stage of adolescence where it can just feel like a battle and they're giving you one word answers and grunting and they won't sit in the same room, this is not the time they're going to sit down and start having open conversations about sex. So there's a timing issue here as well. It's not because you're a bad parent. It's not because they don't like you or trust you or think that you're approachable. But they're in that developmental stage where it just, they're digging in.
Yeah.
Right. They're trying to hold boundaries and keep you at a distance or push back from what you're trying to tell them. They're trying to exert their independence and you're trying to give them a little bit of room, but not so much room because you think they're too young to deal with total freedom, which is your job as a parent.
Yeah.
So it's just, it can just feel like it's a tug of war. But that's what sometimes anyone who's listened to this, who's a parent of a teenager, will be nodding away going, Jesus, yeah.
Yeah, well, I know a lot of people who are, and they don't hold back in telling me how the phase I'm in now.
It's the phase. It's the developmental phase. It's not a commentary on your poor parenting skills or the decline of your relationship with your son or daughter. It's what they need to go through to get to where they want to be, which is an adult that can stand on their own two feet and can respectfully and with emotional intelligence assert their boundaries in lots of different areas of their life. But to get to that point, they've got to push back against someone, and parents are in the front line.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's all relative, but friends of mine who do have kids in that phase of life, they do tell me, like, you know, enjoy this now where you're at. Because
they love you. They give you cuddles.
Yeah, because when it gets to to our stage, they don't want to know. They don't want to, you know.
If you want cuddles then during teenager, get a dog. Yeah.
And again, I suppose it goes back to having good communication with your kids the whole way along will make, hopefully, that transition into teenage years a bit, perhaps, easier. If they feel they can talk to you about other stuff, well, then maybe they'll feel comfortable asking you questions when it comes to what's going on with me. Why am I feeling this way? Can I ask you about sex? Is this... Have you created a relationship with me where I'm not judged by what I ask?
And you know how, and I think you can start doing this way before your teenager gets to 14 or 15 or 16. Like, if you want to lay the groundwork for really kind of open, non-judgmental exchanges or conversations or questions and answers with your teen around sex or relationships, well then, choose carefully what words you use in front of them or around them when the topic of sex and relationships or sexual behaviour comes up.
Okay.
So if you're 11 or 12 or 13 year old is sitting there and you're talking about some scene, whether it's in EastEnders or in some film or it's a couple you know down the road, and someone got pregnant.
Yeah.
And it wasn't planned. And you start making loads of judgmental remarks about them. Well, that'll lodge in the young person's mind. They mightn't understand fully what you're saying or why you're being judgmental, but they'll know. Or if you make other comments about, think of all the judgmental comments people make about relationships and sex.
Yeah.
Lots of it's aimed at women.
Yeah.
In particular. But it's not all. Some around lads as well. So all of that stuff as well. And if sex is never discussed in your house throughout the whole childhood, you're kind of giving your young person in the house a message that sex is not something people discuss.
Yeah.
And it's not something you're clearly comfortable to discuss because you've never mentioned it throughout my whole childhood.
Yeah.
So when I get to 14 or 15 and I have questions and mum has never mentioned sex, and if there's a sex scene on TV, the channel gets changed and no one talks about it, or you know, your uncles and aunts have broken up and there's no discussion about the relationship ending, and it's just not discussed, well then you're not going to be the go-to person for that young person because you've given them a slow to consistent messaging from day one, I'm not available for this.
Yeah.
This is not my terrain.
Mm.
So, and that's, again, I'm always mindful here sounding judgmental of certain approaches. That's an approach. And I bet if there's a person listening to this who's never mentioned sex in front of the young person, that's probably a good reason.
Yeah.
They probably didn't have open conversations about it. They may have had experiences of their own, which... the conversation could be triggering for them.
Yes, yes. And we are products of our own upbringing. It actually takes a fair bit of work, probably, to unlearn stuff that we've gone through.
Loads of my adult clients in my therapy practice over the years, a huge amount of the focus was that.
Yeah.
It was they heard certain things during their adolescence or had certain experiences which lodged in their brains and like a seed grew and grew and grew.
Yeah.
and they got to the age of 35 or 45 or 55 and they've spent 20 or 30 or 40 years having an internal conversation in their head based on the thing they said or did or heard or saw when they were a teenager.
Whoa.
So,
and it can have a massive impact on the rest of your life.
Of course it can. So yeah. So if you talk to someone now who's having whatever experiences in whatever area of their sexual development, and you can just, in really non-shaming, non-judgmental, nurturing, kind of loving ways.
Yes, yeah.
Then you set them off into their adulthood in a much healthier direction than the young person who's kind of grappling internally with what they've just done and goes, Jesus, what's it say about me?
Mm.
And you spend your adult life hammering yourself.
Yeah, yeah. It's a real invitation for us as adults, us as parents or aunts or uncles or anyone that has a connection with a younger person, to bloody do the work. Get okay with it yourself. That's what I'm really feeling from you. That, you know, you can't expect a teenager to be comfy if you're riddled with shame and judgment and awkwardness, you know. So we have to get comfy with the messy stuff.
Mm.
We haven't even spoken. People are probably listening going, will she ever ask him what's actually in the book? So, I mean, you cover it. You really do cover it all. It's, you know, from sexual desire, sexting, safe sex, even putting on a condom, which I thought was absolutely brilliant because, again, like all things, there's an assumption that, you know, you give a young lad a packet and he knows what to do. But sure, how would he? He's never done it before.
And that came from myself and Elaine Burns, a colleague of mine. We used to do a sexual health workshop in my old school. And it was a 6-week thing, and the final week was always the week that was always the most fun.
Okay.
So we it was like, it was about safe sex. So there's the bit about STIs.
Mm.
And this is the symptoms of each one, and this is how they're contracted, and this is how they're treated. But then there's the bit about, well, how do you prevent that?
Yeah.
So we'd have a big bag full of condoms, a lot of plastic looking penises, and we'd invite them to, who's going to come up to the class and try it?
Right, okay.
And can you imagine the giddiness the excitement and the buzz when you're 15 and you're 25 year mates in the class and someone's just been asked, come up and show us how you use a condom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we give everyone a go and then just circulate a load of different plastic penises and everyone gets to try. And we go around and go, well, this is what, you know, don't have an air bubble at the top and put it on the right way.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is how you take it off. Really practical stuff. So you're going way beyond lectures about the dangers of pregnancies or STIs.
Yes.
You're going to actual helpful stuff. Going, if you want to have sex, go and have sex. It's potentially great. If you don't have sex, don't have sex.
Yeah.
Just assert those boundaries and you're fine. But if you do want to have sex and you don't want to get pregnant and you don't want to get an STI, this is one of the really, really, really effective and important ways of preventing both. And here's how. There's no judgment, no shame, no anything.
Because you're not approaching it that way either. So they're vibing off your, like, they'll pick up on whatever your kind of energy is. Mm.
But also there's a thing, and this is not just in terms of, like, for example, if they were to do it wrong,
right?
Like, it would be completely ridiculous of myself or Elaine in that classroom to turn around and reprimand them for getting it wrong.
Of course.
Because you don't expect expertise from a 15 or 16 year old in an area that no one's ever talked to them about or demonstrated to them about. So that's why I think just a conversational approach is better than a...
They're fiddly enough things anyway for adults, let's be honest.
Yes.
Come on.
And if you chuck in then being drunk or out of your head
and
drugs...
And awkward and you fancy this girl or this guy...
So that's the real life stuff. Rather than just the one sentence stuff that you can summarise in a tweet about the importance of safe sex. That's great. But it's not helpful to a young person who needs a bit more.
Yeah. When does the energy go from giddy giddy messing, slagging, ah, Jesus, look at your man doing it? Well, you know what I mean? To, all right, now I know how to actually do this when the time comes.
In the class, so, and it's always the most fun. So someone will come up and put the condom on and then we'll distribute them and they'll all do loads. And you can see around the class that people are doing it and they, you know, they're praising each other or they're a little bit competitive or whatever. And someone will always blow it up and put it on their head.
Right.
There's always a guy. And they're important too, those lads in those classes, because you want to be able to harness all the nervous energy giddiness and the hormones.
And the laughter is what release.
Exactly. If you go into a classroom setting like that or a conversation with a young person and you expect them to be all, you know, like sitting there and you're not understanding the person you're talking to or the world in which they're in.
Even if you got a group of adults into a room to put condoms on like penis looking like things.
Yes.
There'd be lots of laughter.
Exactly.
Messing. Come on.
Exactly.
Of course there would.
I think that's better than just like not talking about it or slagging each other for not having all the answers or for not being experts.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Lots of the chapters are the sections in the book I really liked, but I thought your section on porn was brilliant because, again, it's a very realistic let's talk about it. That's the name of the book.
The name is great. The publishers just came up with the name.
It's brilliant. Like, oh, that just deadly. keeps coming back to it. Because, you know, we have a lot of opinion about porn. It's something that a lot of us are not comfortable talking about. But while, yes, of course, there can be negatives depending, there are also positives. So we need to just embrace it as it is and realize that it ain't going away. It has always been around. And yes, there is a bigger issue nowadays of the access that young people have to it at an earlier age than I was even aware of until I spoke to Emily Power Smith, and she was kind of saying, usually from the age of 11, young people have access to porn, which I did, I'm not going to lie, I personally found a little shocking. But I'm glad I know that and that we need to be aware of that. And I think it is a bit of a shame if you're seeing a lot at an early age, because there is so much beauty, I suppose, and fun in learning as a young person and experiencing things for the first time. But if you've been exposed to so much, you're kind of denying yourself that opportunity too. But anyway, what I really liked in the book was how you discussed porn.
Chats about porn are tricky because a lot of people think, oh Christ, do I have to talk about my relationship with porn? Or is the person now going to ask me, do I watch porn? Do I like it? All this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then when you're talking to young people, you've this thing of, well, if they don't know, by me bringing it up, am I bringing attention to something they don't know about? Are they old enough? Like, what's the right age? How do I know they're... All this kind of stuff. But you're right, like, I'd be familiar enough for that, what Emily told you. Like, if you give a young person an iPhone, or you give them a young person a smartphone, or even if they don't have one, they'll be hanging around with someone who does. Or, like, they've access to stuff that just didn't exist when me and you were 11.
Yeah.
Just didn't. So there's lots of stuff that we'll chat around here that anyone who's ever worked with teenagers, like with any generation, they'll see again and again. But with this generation of teenagers, they just have a different landscape to navigate through in the ways that we didn't.
Yeah.
Like I remember, I think you'd have the odd VHS, like a video.
Yeah.
Like I assume most people listen to this know what a video is, but a lot of teenagers would have never, literally never seen or held a video.
Yeah.
It's just not in their world. And there'd be, you might get a video, some of the older lads in the estate might have a video and you might hear about the video. Mm. And if you all happen to be in a free house at the time, you might see a section of it.
Yeah.
There'd be a magazine maybe on a trip with a school or a football team. Like, man, the simplicity of that world.
Yeah.
But now the world is different. That they've access to so much information about sex and so much imagery and footage of sex.
Mm.
And
what that's doing to the young mind.
That's the important thing. Because I think, again, me and you have enough life experience to know that there's loads of different ways to have sex and there's loads of different ways that your partner might enjoy sex, or you can communicate about sex, or you know the landscape because we've been in it for a while now. Mm. But when you're 15, it's first of all really appropriate that you get excited about sexual imagery and sexual footage.
Yeah,
it's appropriate to be curious. That's what's meant to happen. So you remove any of the judgment about, oh my God, he's watching. Oh my God, he likes sex. He's turned on by sex.
Yeah,
like so remove that because that's normal, healthy development. And the thing with porn is, particularly to people at that age, they've no reference point to real experiences yet. They're in the main very inexperienced cohort you're talking about. And they're just starting to have certain experiences, or their friends are. So if they're watching porn, the way I kind of approach it in the book, it's not obviously a finger-wagging, lecturing, warning kind of chat. It's just, this exists.
Mm.
I'm sure you're excited by sex and curious about sex. It's totally appropriate you'd want to learn more about it. It's totally understandable you'd like to be good at it the first time you do it or have it, whatever language you want to use. So it makes sense, actually, when I think about it, why wouldn't you look at porn at some point?
Mm.
However, because you've no real life experiences and no adult talks to you about this, and you probably don't discuss the porn scenes you watch with your parents, you're going to be left on your own to work out which is the bits I should kind of replicate when I'm in that situation and which are the bits that will get me arrested if I do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you've got to acknowledge in porn, some of them are healthy sex scenes and some of them are actual crime scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
But that there won't be a notice on the screen telling you which is which. Like me and you could watch or be aware of a scene where, I don't know, maybe a woman is repeatedly smacked or she's spoken about in a really derogatory way, or she repeatedly says no, but the man or the more than one man just ignores the no and keeps going. Like those scenes are all over the internet. Mm. They're all over porn and you don't have to go digging too deep for them. So if you're a young person trying to work out, I want to have a partner one day, let's say a girl, I want to have a girlfriend one day and I want to have sex and I want to be good at it and I want to make sure they're enjoying it.
Hmm.
Porn will teach me. Now, that's a really rational way for a young person to think.
Yeah.
And so he'll see all these people being mistreated in porn and go, wow, she seemed to really like that. The more she was called a whore and a slut and actually smacked across the face or on the backside or spat on or really, like, again, there'll be somebody be listening to this going, oh, actually, that's part of my sex life. And that's fine. You're an adult. You get to consensually work out with your partner whatever the hell you want to do in a bedroom.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're a 15-year-old, we've got to help them tease out healthy from unhealthy, consensual, non-consensual, like, okay, criminal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's why I kind of took that approach.
Yeah. I would imagine at the end of the book, whether the young guy reading it or the parent or whoever it is picks it up, you are going to, because I did, I found myself asking myself the whole way along, not just when I was younger, but now as a woman of 40, nearly 43, that, you know, yeah, what do I like? What do I want? What feels right for me? And that has changed, obviously.
I bet it has, yeah.
Yeah, because we do. We all change and it's ever evolving, which is what's lovely about it, I think. And the more connected you are with the person you are with, I think the more freedom it gives you in your own skin and in your sexual relationship together. But I definitely found myself like checking in with myself every time I was reading. That would be a scary idea that, as you said, whether it's a guy or a girl that sees something, because I remember, again, I keep going back to it, but I thought what she said was brilliant.
She was great.
She's amazing.
If people listen to this, haven't listened, go listen to it.
Ah, cheers. Thanks. Yeah, she is really, really good. But when she said, young guys watch porn to know what to do and girls watch porn to know how to behave.
Yeah, and what to look like.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, there's loads of different ways in which sex is enacted and depicted and performed in porn, obviously. But a very prominent theme or pattern of many, many scenes is the purpose is to get the guy to come.
Yeah.
And the woman is, that's her role, to support him in that endeavor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And she is, and that's her role. And which again, in lots of circumstances, that can be done in a really healthy, consensual, fun, like amazing way. But it's not particularly useful to have the entire youth population learn about sex and porn, and whether they're male or female, come away with the idea that that's what sex is.
Yeah.
That it's about the guy deciding what he wants, the woman facilitating it, if it's a man and a woman together, and then once he comes, that's it.
Mm.
Job done. Everyone's happy. We've got to the point where we all wanted to get.
Mm.
He's missing out a huge amount of the experience there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Relationships, breakups, they're all covered in the book as well. So it's not just, I've kind of automatically gone into the obvious, which is sexual desire, the act of sex itself, porn, that all goes with it. But you really do focus on the emotional side of things hugely, because mm-hmm. that's so important, because we learn about what's happening biologically in school. Like we learn the basics, but it's the emotional and mental aspect of all those changes hormonally that are happening and all that goes with it, that is massive.
Do you know, I only thought of this morning coming in, and I don't remember actively thinking about it when I wrote the book, but something my therapist said to me years ago. I just asked him some conversation. Are you busy loads with the recession or something? That was the question I asked at the time. And he said, a lot of my work is helping people fall out of love.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I did what you're doing now. You're kind of looking into this and going, what the hell? Okay, what does that mean? And I asked him, and he said, we don't learn about that, about ending relationships in a healthy way.
Yeah.
There's no discussion anywhere that I remember of breakups. Exactly like you said, you learn what goes where.
Yeah.
Certain body name parts, the names of body parts. But stuff like that, I think, is useful to know as well. Yeah. Of any age. And again, because I would have a lot of young clients who are the children of parents who are no longer in a relationship. And in some cases, they've broken up in a really healthy way, and they co-parent in a really healthy way. And whether it's over one household or two households, whatever it is, it's all done in a healthy way. There are loads of examples, though, where it's not. And I think young people in those scenarios might grow up to believe, well, when you break up, you sign up to a lifelong conflict with your ex.
Mm-hmm.
And you're meant to make disparaging remarks. You're meant to not talk to each other. You're meant to make shitty remarks about them on social media. You're meant to be rude around each other, blank their calls, send dirty messages, send rude messages.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Oh, really unhealthy stuff. And you know, that's not the aspiration here. It can be done differently. Mm. So just tease out ways in which it can be done. And like nowadays, conversations around, do we delete social media posts of us together? Do we, if we have nude photos of one another, what do we do with that?
That's something you cover as well, which I thought was fantastic, because, you know, that's and not just for young people, like that is a thing.
Yeah.
You know, it is a thing now. And
which didn't exist when we were teenagers.
Again, no.
I didn't have to navigate, like when I'm like, if I was with my partner and we were teenagers and really aroused or in different households and she suggested or I suggested, you know, send a pic.
Yeah.
And I never had to work out as a teenager, what do I do in that situation?
Mm.
Or when I had to deal with the aftermath of sending a picture to someone and going, oh Christ, I wish I didn't do that.
Mm.
or sending a picture online to someone who turns out not to be the person they think they are, and you're dealing with the aftermath of that.
Mm.
Or your ex has pictures of you and you've had a really shitty breakup and you're dealing with the worry of that. These are all things we didn't have to deal with that when we were teenagers.
No, and like when you say that now, I'm actually getting I feel like I'm just, it's almost like a hot flush for want of a better description, because I'm being reminded of something that happened to me myself as a teenager. And when I look at it now, it seems so innocent and nonsensical. But at the time, I was crippled with anxiety about it. And it was that I kissed this guy and I felt a lot of shame about it, right, mm-hmm. as a kid. And I felt guilty for feeling that way because I didn't want anyone to know. And when I think of it now, it's so innocent, but that crippled me. It was my every thought, and I'm even now starting to feel that awkwardness I felt at the time, because I felt guilty because I felt I'm thinking bad thoughts about this guy and he's kind of just an innocent guy really. But then I don't think my friends would have approved, so I didn't want them to know. And I had all of these different emotions going on, and that was just giving a guy a kiss.
I think so. You're sitting there
and I'm just imagining what would I be like if I had sent that guy a photo, or he had sent, do you know what I mean? I'm just going, that is a whole other realm.
So what you're doing now is you're getting in touch with your teenage self, which is what we said a moment ago. Like a lot of us, because it's so long ago, we forget. Or we don't think, and we expect certain responses or certain abilities or certain patterns of thought from the young person we're talking to. And we forget the things which, to use your words, are relatively innocent and really low level can feel so overwhelming.
Yeah.
And in times can feel catastrophic. And like, so you have to be really just empathic and just remember, oh yeah, we're not talking to someone who's got a loads of experience and loads of perspective and have been on the life journey long enough to realise that, you know what, this will pass in a few days, and in the bigger scheme, no one matters. You're talking to a group of people who, you know, they don't want to go to school because they have a cold sore and they think the whole room will look at them.
Yeah,
they're so embarrassed by the thing they did or didn't say last Friday, or there's a picture and they look really bad in the picture, or not, and the picture went online. These are things that are like really overwhelming to a young person. To an adult, you go, don't be such a drama queen.
Sure.
Don't be such a melodramatic little shit.
Yeah.
But in the mind of a young person,
it's all consuming.
It's all consuming. They're so self-conscious at stages during adolescence.
Yeah. And when you fall in love for the first time, it's like love like you've never felt before. That first breakup is like devastation like you've never felt before.
Yeah.
And as you said, having empathy for that, not dismissing it, is so important. God, I'm having so many flashbacks.
But I like this. Like this is we're doing just what, like, it was having a chat.
Yeah, that's what it's all
and
about.
I think conversations like this are worth having. Ideally, not with a microphone for most people.
Yeah.
They'd prefer not to have these conversations aired, but. I think when you have chats like this and you remember little bits of your own teenage experience, you just immediately develop a bit more understanding or empathy for a teenager. And I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Rather than go in going, this is what you should do. Like, teenagers are full of adults telling them what they should do.
Mm.
But adults who kind of approach it with understanding and empathy for what they're going through, that's a really good place to start.
Yeah. What's been the reaction with friends, family who've read it?
The only person I know who's read it all is my mum.
Yeah.
And she sent me a message the other day, because I got copies about 2 weeks ago, and I sent a handful of them out to people, and my mum, and I hope she won't mind me saying, I was like, Mum, you need to get yourself back on Tinder now. Like, think of what you now know that you didn't know before you read this. And she makes some jokes. She says, oh, listen, all I need to do is order a pizza now. I read the porn section. I know what happens when pizzas get delivered. So that was a nice little
reaction.
Chat with my my mother.
Yeah.
But it's... And you know, in a way, I'd prefer to have these conversations where I wasn't here promoting a book, because it sounds like I'm just promoting a book, but I think the issues in it are worth promoting. and they're worth talking about, and conversations with one another are worth having.
Yeah, and again, it's back to what you have written in the book for your 15-year-old self. Look how far you've come. Look at all the work you've done, primarily on yourself, that you now can help other people as a result of your training, of all the self-reflection you did yourself. And, you know, I know it's an overused term, but the journey you've gone on yourself.
I think another reason to write a book which is promoting open conversations, or that's titled Let's Talk, is because I suppose I would have had a lot of experiences or years of my life where there was stuff I wanted to say that I couldn't.
Yeah.
Or that I had feelings of shame or embarrassment or discomfort about some of the things I did or didn't do in this area of my life. And then when I wrote the book a few years ago, I remember going, Jesus, this is mad. I'm after writing down the most personal stuff, the most intimate stuff, the stuff I never spoke to my closest friends about. And then I had a lovely moment a week ago where my wife's cousin works in the prison system, and she in the prison service, and she had asked me a while ago, will you come into Wheatfield Prison, because we've got a rake of books, copies of your first book, and we just, I think the lads would really appreciate if you come in and spoke to them.
Right.
And I went in last Friday, and I sat up at the top of the hall, and my wife's cousin sitting next to me asked me a few questions, and the group of people in front of me, 95% of them I'd say were the prisoners, and there was some staff. I don't know how many, maybe 50, 60, 80 people, I don't know what. And I spoke with complete comfort, total comfort, about all of the things that I used never say to people. So about my own stuff with drink, or my own stuff with shame around what happened to me when I was a teenager, or going to therapy or attending therapy, or, you know, talking with, you know, you say things that you don't think lads should talk about, or you don't admit, or you don't show your vulnerability or your weakness, all that stuff, all bollocks.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah, of course.
And it was lovely just to be able to sit there. And then a few of the lads come up afterwards, and then they started opening up a little bit about stuff that they were dealing with or had dealt with. And it's just all that stuff. It's like we all have stuff. Mm-hmm. We all have stuff that we haven't said to people, or when we think about it, we get a little bit embarrassed or ashamed. And we think we're unique in that.
Yeah.
I'm the only person who's think this. I'm the only person who's done that. And if my friends or my family knew I said or did that or did or didn't do that, what would they think of me? And it just offloading that or processing that or just getting rid of it is a worthwhile pursuit.
Yeah.
And I think it starts by chatting.
Yeah, it does, yeah. Yeah.
To the right person in the right forum.
Yeah.
Usually less private than a podcast.
Yeah. But this is why I love chats like this. Well, also with people like you, because you're clearly extremely comfortable, which then puts me at ease, because if you were anyway awkward, I'd feel that, you know, and vice versa. Do you get embarrassed about anything anymore?
I'm sure if you really pushed me here, I might, but I can't think of anything.
Yeah.
Like all the usual stuff, like around sex or that's you. Actually, that's the first category they come up in my head where you mentioned the word embarrassment.
Yeah.
That's the area that I most associate, that I think most of us feel that in that area of our life.
Totally.
Which is mad, isn't it?
It is. Because it's such a normal, natural
part. Because we're all having it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We all exist because of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And yes, we're unsure where to go when the topic is mentioned.
Yeah.
Because there's so much feckin' judgment, and women should do it. This is appropriate do's and don'ts for females, and this is appropriate do's and don'ts for lads. And I don't know. There's surely a different, better way.
Yeah. Well, this is a massive step forward in that regard. You really have covered it all. I just want to know now what the next book is going to be.
I will go home and tell Fiona if I ever mention the thought of writing another book, you were to shoot me.
Okay, this is now the second time you've said that.
On record. I like it's gas. I I didn't think I had a book in me. I never thought I'd write the last book I wrote. And if a 15-year-old me was told that I'd be having a conversation like this at the ripe old age of 43, if 25-year-old, 35-year-old me was told that, it would have just been astounding to me. Like, completely, I would not have been able to even contemplate a conversation like this about a book like this, which was written by me. It would have been way too big a leap to consider.
But it's possible.
That's how life, works out, isn't it?
Yeah.
I started all that in the very private, safe space of a therapy room.
Sure, yeah.
And I think a lot of people's, that will be the start for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think it's
an important message.
It's an important start. It's an important thing to say because we probably all have memories of where you say something to somebody and they don't react the way you want them to. There's a time and a place for certain conversations, and there's certain people, and we all have them, who, you know, they're not the person that can hear this or will be able to listen to this or can support me or respond in the way that I think I need. Or, you know, there's just some people who you think they'll just listen. They won't tell me what to do, but I'll feel better after speaking to them.
Yes. Yeah.
We all have them. So it is good to talk, but it's important to choose carefully who you speak to about the personal stuff, the intimate stuff.
It's really good because there is, you know, because you can't take it back if you do decide to open up to somebody who's just not able for it or will.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Say the wrong thing, you can't really take that conversation back. Yeah, it's a really good message. Look, I wish you the best with it. I don't need to wish you the best with it because I know it's going to be a huge seller and it's absolutely brilliant. As I said to you, I'm going to be holding on to it for my own son, and maybe you should just write one with Fiona about the female perspective next time, because we need one of those too.
Leave that with me.
Yeah. Okay, that's the next one. Richie, thanks a million.
Thanks a million. Thanks for asking me back.
If you enjoyed this conversation, you can go back and listen to our earlier chat if you missed that one. And why not check out the episodes I recorded with sexologist Emily Power-Smith as well. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real.